You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to another fabulous episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I'm your host, Michael Kushner, and I'm so excited to be bringing this wonderful episode to you. I went on a little two-week hiatus, and then I brought out Jason Rodriguez's episode, and I think that was such a great episode, and I'm sort of getting back into the swing of things. I needed to take that hiatus because there's some life stuff happening, which I'll tell you about. One, you know, I have that book. I have a book coming out, which I'm really excited about. It's called How to Be a Multi-Hyphenate in the Theater Business: Conversations, Advice, and Tips from Dear Multi-Hyphenate. And it's getting published with Rutledge Publishing of the Taylor and Francis Group, and should be out at the top of 2022. I turned in the first draft, the rough draft, and then that final manuscript gets turned in November. So it's a very quick experience. Hard. I think it's the hardest thing I've ever done artistically. I loved every second of it, but boy, did I need a stiff drink after. I didn't write while drunk, but sometimes reading back, I'm like, wow, maybe I did. And then I have to delete those sentences and write coherently. It's been a time. But I'm really excited to share it with you. Color images, excerpts from my podcast, new conversations. I've interviewed 112 different artists, so it's really great, and it's all about multi-hyphenating in the theater business. So I'm really, really excited for that to hit shelves and for you to know more about it. Ooh, CoStar just came on my phone. Let's see. Say it until you believe it. Thanks, CoStar. I'm saying it. The book is coming out, and I do believe it. I think that was Beshert, and people that listen to this show know Beshert is a Yiddish word for meant to be, and it's meant to be. So, yes, that book is coming out soon, and I'm very excited, and of course, I'll update more. Another huge life update is that I've now started as the director of programming at the Green Room 42, which is Broadway's off-night hotspot for cabaret and concert. I'm very excited to take this venue into this Broadway playground, sort of a vibe where artists can come and learn something new about themselves and just sort of mess around and be a better artist because of what they and a more informed artist because of what they produced on that stage. Maybe they discovered a whole new act. Maybe this one thing that they learned while producing the show is going to take their direction in a whole new career. I want to provide that incubator sort of space for New York City, because there are like no incubating concert cabaret spaces in New York City. And I think when we put on a cabaret and concert in New York, it's expected to be polished and perfect. And I want to create a space where that necessarily isn't at the top of the list. Come and be messy. Audiences love to be at that performance where in like 5 years they'll go, I was at that show when you did, you know, whatever. It makes the audience feel connected, and it relaxes the artist as well. And I think overall it just sells more tickets and packs the room better, and it's more of an enjoyable artistic experience. So come check us out at the Green Room 42 in New York City, and of course I'll be talking more about that. All right, let's get started with the episode. I love this episode. It's a great episode featuring Ben Fankhauser. And Ben Fankhauser and Alex Wise, who's a guest on Dear Multi-Hyphenate in the past, have a new musical off Broadway, which is called A Commercial Jingle for Regina Comet. And it's running now. It opened September 27th. It's running now through November 14th at the DR2 Theater in Union Square in New York. I saw it, and I had a smile behind my mask the whole entire time. I thought it was funny. I thought it was zany. I thought the songs were amazing. I felt a part of the joke. I felt like I was a part of a big old inside joke, and it's just so wonderful. And it's 80 minutes long, so you're in and out, and it really just, I want to see it 2, 3, 4, 5 more times. I thought it was absolutely fabulous. And I hope you go see it. So go to www.reginacomet.com and buy your tickets now. It's running till November 14th at the DR2 Theater in Union Square. And now I have Ben Fankhauser, multi-hyphenate, who wrote the show with Alex Wise and is starring in it as well. Ben Fankhauser is best known for playing Davy in Newsies in the original Broadway cast and movie. Other New York credits include Mac and Mabel at Encore, Saturday Night, and Bar Mitzvah Boy at the York Theater, and also the first national tours of Beautiful and Spring Awakening. In regional theaters, Ben has been seen at The Flamingo Kid at Hartford Stage, American in Paris, Big River, I Hate Hamlet, Next to Normal, and on television, The Deuce, Indoor Boys, which I am the executive producer on, and the Tony Awards. Ben is a frequent guest performer at many cabaret venues in New York City, including 54 Below, Feinstein's 54 Below, where his solo concert, Ben's Fanked Up Broadway, had a sold-out run. You can hear more from Ben on Spotify, iTunes, and YouTube. And please, go see a commercial jingle for Regina Comet. Enjoy!
Hi, Michael Kushner.
How are you?
Ugh, I'm great. Couldn't be better.
What do you have planned for this Tuesday?
Okay, well, I'm talking to you in the 10 o'clock hour, and I'm going to head down to Union Square to begin tech on my show, a commercial jingle for Regina Comet, which I'm really excited about. We started rehearsals like 2 weeks ago, and now we're teching, and it feels like summer stock, and I love it, and theater is coming back, and it feels really good to be a part of that group that's bringing it all back to New York.
There's something so there's something so wonderful and exploratory about summer stock, and like I think all actors should sort of experience, just because it is this fly by the seat of your pants sort of experience, like get the story up in 2 weeks and hope for the best.
The thing about summer stock is like the show is going to open whether you're ready or not.
Yeah.
Like there's going to be an audience regardless of your preparation level. So you kind of have to learn to like let things go and just do your best and know that things will come together in time. And that's a really good lesson, because it can be stressful, you know, and we can spend a lot of time worrying like, oh God, this isn't good enough, or I didn't get there in time. But like, the time passes, hon. Like it's going to open. Sorry.
Honey, you know? TikTok, the time passes. TikTok. Cut number from Company, TikTok. Except it's back in this revival, I do
believe.
Is
it really?
Well, I saw it in London, and I don't remember TikTok happening in London, but I think it's happening on Broadway. If my gayness is correct, but there's something I like to sort of call it the opening night mentality, and I guess you could also call it like the summer stock mentality. But like, mm-hmm. I think it's sort of interesting how artists are expected to break all boundaries, when they're not in a controlled environment, like a summer stock experience. And like, they're expected to like have their phone on them during like a yoga class, or like cut like family time at work, and to like, you know, learn those 50 pages of sides for auditions and stuff. And it's like, well, no, I need to, you know, I'm pregnant or like my kid's graduation, or, you know, something right. like that. And I feel like that like summer stock opening up mentality is carried over into the industry in, I think, negative and positive waves. But what are you like, what are sort of the ways that you have run into that mentality, and like what, and in ways that have worked out for you, and ways that you that haven't worked out for you, and how do you sort of balance that?
That's interesting. I mean, when you say it like that, I can't really think of ways that it hasn't worked out, because like in a way it always works out. Like yeah. sometimes it's a little bit different than you imagined, but like that's a beautiful thing about life, is like it works out. Mm-hmm. And you know, that as I get older, like it, you know, that kind of that maybe it's a skill that you develop or a muscle that you exercise. But I think putting up any kind of show, whether it's like a 54 Below concert, whether it's a Broadway musical with like a luxurious 5-week rehearsal process, whether it's a little tiny off Broadway production with a 2.5 week and a day rehearsal process, like you're gonna, like the amount of time that you have is the correct amount of time, you know? And that idea that like, oh, if I only had another week, it's like that took me a long time to kind of like grow out of that idea, because you have exactly the amount of time that you need. And there's something freeing about kind of just like giving it up to that and being like, all right, well, I have a day to learn this song, and all of YouTube is going to be there, and like I have one shot at it, you know. And I think as I get older, those kind of like one-off performances are like the scariest to me, just because like you really, you know, there's something about being in your young 20s and being so hungry for it, and you memorize the shit out of the song in a second, and you like have one go at it, and you just give it your all. And as you get older, it's kind of like, oh my gosh, that's a lot of pressure. You sort of like realize in hindsight, okay, that's a lot of pressure, and that can be hard and challenging to deal with. But that's like, that's the dream, you know, that's what I've always wanted. And I think you're right. I think that carries over not just in performing, but in writing and in producing. Things change like in an hour, things change overnight, and you have to be ready to adapt. And you can't spend too much time being, quote, precious about your work. You just have to ask yourself the tough questions and try and answer them as best you can, and just do the work, and you know, not listen to that voice in your mind that's like, is this the right answer? Is this good enough? You know, and it's something we're all still learning, I think.
It's amazing to hear you talk about this. I mean, like, you know, we went to college together, but it's not that our paths didn't, I mean, we went to Ithaca, and it's a smaller program, but you know, you went to go do the Spring Awakening tour, which was amazing. And then, you came back, and then I had gone to London, and you happened to be in London at the same time. And we got to spend time in London together. And that was sort of the first time that I really got to like talk to you and spend a lot of time with you. And I've always admired your points of views. But the interesting thing is, like, did you always consider yourself? So what I consider myself a multi-hyphenate is an artist who has multiple proficiencies that cross-pollinate to help flourish professional capabilities. Did you always consider yourself a multi-hyphenate, or is this something that you later on discovered about yourself?
You know, I love your program because you name it so beautifully. But I think for me, it's something that took me a while to kind of realize what I was all about. Mm-hmm. However, looking back, I think I was always a multi-hyphenate. I was always a musician. I was always an actor and then a singer, like a wannabe writer, a storyteller, a producer. But I never really had considered, it was more just like an innate knowledge of like the kind of things that I want to do with my life. And frankly, it wasn't until I like heard about your program years ago that I was like, oh, that's a genius name. Mm. For it, that there's a crossover. And so for me, the crossover always existed. It just hadn't really registered that that was a thing, or that you could be a person who didn't cross over. Like, to me, we all cross over whether we want to or not.
Right. Exactly. And I think in the 21st century, we have to, especially, mm-hmm. I just think, like, you know, this industry was taken. Okay. So the way that we knew the industry was completely taken away from us, right? And it's like no one tells artists what to do ever. Why should it be any different than the pandemic? And we just need to sort of figure out what the structure was. And I think a lot of artists did it. And I think what a lot of artists figured out was the fact that, like, those rules needn't only apply in a pandemic, but they can apply mm-hmm. at any time. And that casting directors, you know, whatever relationship you have with them, casting directors and producers and other people that are gatekeepers in the industry don't need to be the ones dictating every step of an artist's moves in their lives.
I love to hear you say that. And my show with Alex Wise, the commercial jingle for Regina Comet, is born exactly out of that concept. I mean, Alex and I had done a show in Hartford, a really fun show called The Flamingo Kid. And we did that over the summer. And then that fall, it was kind of like, you know, you do a big summer musical and then it's the fall and you're kind of like waiting for the phone to ring, waiting for the auditions to be like, okay, I wonder if I'll have a job soon. And that is such an exhausting process for an actor, you know, and unfortunately that's part of the gig, that is actually is the gig. Yeah. You know, there's all this in between time, and Alex called me up one day and was like, I'm so sick of waiting for permission, you know? And it was like, that's exactly what this is. It's like, I feel like I'm waiting for permission to do my thing. And we decided, you know, in an unspoken moment that like, we don't need to wait for permission. Let's make something, you know, I don't know if it's going to be a concert or a play or a musical, obviously it like found its way, but that's exactly right. And I think a lot of people found that in the pandemic, but that was always true and will continue to always be true, is that as an artist, like, we don't need to wait for permission. And I think we've perhaps been conditioned in a certain way to think like, okay, there are gatekeepers, there are doors you need to wait to get through, you need to climb a ladder, you need to wait your turn, you need to like go on the grind. And to a degree, those things are true. However, like, there's nothing stopping us from creating something beautiful just to create something beautiful, you know? And perhaps commercial theater has sort of like colored our idea of like what makes something a success or what makes something worthy of being created. But this idea of like, I don't need to wait for permission has like, it's been, I don't know, maybe like 3 years in the development for me personally of like, okay, I can make my own stuff. And like, it doesn't need to be a hit. It, you know, it's about process. It's about what makes me happy. Mm-hmm. It's about sharing my view with the world. And that's exactly what an artist is, whether they're a painter, a writer, an actor, an interpreter, a creative, whatever. Like, it's about sharing your heart with the world. And, we don't need to wait for permission to do that.
Yeah. You know, I think it's so interesting because it sort of looks, if we were to like put this on paper, it looks like it would be the opposite end of the experience. But I think there's no equation for success in this industry, right? Like, we think these macro musicals that have, you know, $30 million budgets are going to come to Broadway and that's going to equal success. But then they close, you know, a month later. And then we have shows like Title of Show or Spring Awakening with these smaller shows in theory that like then become, you know, massive hits and cult followings. And even when they do close, they have regional and college, you know, lives. So, exactly. But I do think like the idea of the only key to success in this industry is doing what makes you happy, because that joy and that and your specific point of view, the point of view that you can fight for, no one else can fight for it. No one else can sell your story like you can. And when people believe that, people will give you money. You know, right. I just feel like people do buy when a specific point of view is really clear and it's really concise and it's sold well. But you know, you brought up an interesting point about like of the idea of what success is supposed to look like in this industry. And it's so interesting because like for me, like I've always loved the, you know, I look at my books right now and I see like Madeline Kahn's biography and Diary of a Mad Playwright and Patti LuPone's memoir, Second Act Trouble, Mel Brooks, like that's like my vibe. But then like, then comes along the YouTube generation, right? Which is like a part, which is like when I think of like my college self and like researching musical theater on YouTube, there was such a disconnect for me because like, I'm not, as you know, I'm not a tenor who can easily plug myself into contemporary music. And it was very hard for me to watch because like I was watching sort of musical theater be written into this place where it was like, thanks for your time, but now we're doing this. And and I got into my head for a second because I was like, oh, I guess that's what musical theater is, until I realized that my place is my voice and my perspective. And then we could celebrate it all. We could do it all.
Right. Yeah. There's room for everybody. And it's interesting that you say that. And like, that connects with me as well. Like I would consider myself a baritenor, mm-hmm. and I like watched over the years, like starting from in like 2007, every year it was like the range grew a half step, and now people are just screaming and I'm like, I can't do that. That's insane.
No.
And so I definitely get that dissonance and that disconnect of mm-hmm. like, where do I belong? But you're exactly right. Like there's only one of you, you know?
There's only one. And I mean, it's, you know, you have one of the best voices in this fucking industry. It's like, you know, you're iconic, man. You're amazing.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's talk about your show, because
yeah.
you have this amazing show. First of all, Alex Wise is a creative partner with Indoor Boys, and anything he does, I will support, obviously. And of course, anything you do, I will support, obviously. So I'm so excited to talk about a commercial jingle for Regina Comet. Let's get the logistics out. Where, when, before we get to the how and why, where, when,
yes,
how do we get tickets, what's going on?
So Regina Comet is a one act musical. It is a ton of fun. You can find it at in Union Square at the Daryl Roth Theater. It's at the DR2. So the secondary space in the Daryl Roth building. And we start previews on September 17th, which I'm not sure.
The Spread Eagle.
Okay. That's exactly right. And then we open about a week and a half later on the 26th, and we're playing for a few months. So get your tickets. You can go to reginacomet.com, I believe, or just do a little Google search for Regina Comet. And you can get really affordable seats. We're in a wonderful, I guess like new contemporary theater. So it's a really nice space. It's a 99 seater. So it's super intimate, following all kinds of COVID protocols and safety procedures, which is great. And that's how we do these days. And yeah, it's a 3-hand musical. I mean, think like what you were talking about, think like title of show, think A New Brain, think, you know, like your quirky small musicals. And this is a ton of fun. And those of you out there who know Alex Wise's work will not be disappointed in the jokes and the goofiness, and the songs, if I don't say so myself, are bops. And the story, I think, is great and heartwarming and deep, as well as funny. And yeah, so we're starting in just a week. We're playing all through September, October, and some of November. So come check us out.
Well, we definitely will. So I went to I saw Passover on Broadway as I'm recording this. I've seen Passover on Broadway, and then I went to the premiere of the documentary. The Show Must Go On, created yes. by Sammy Kenold and Dori Berenstein, which was amazing. And then I went to see the final Dress for Wicked, and it's amazing to sit in an audience. And I feel like I'm always aware of my mask and stuff like that. And obviously we need to wear our masks until we're fully in the clear, but, and we're right. all vaxxed, get waxed right. and vaxxed and relaxed, please. You know, it's once the lights go up, it's like, I forget I have it on. What are you anticipating, like opening up a musical when we thought the pandemic was going to be over, but we keep getting these hits of these variants? But yeah. what's going through your head as you open a new musical, which we need more of? We need more new musicals in this very historic time.
Hey, that's a big question. So this has been like one of the most joyous experiences of my life. And because of the Delta variant and like the various like threats to our reopening, it's been the kind of thing where it's like, I'm not taking a second of this for granted. I don't know how long it will last. I mean, I'm like hoping and praying it lasts as long as it's supposed to last. But we don't know. Like, there's so many unknowns that the pandemic has taught us, like, things can change in a second. And so that is a very different approach than things I've done in the past. And we are the first new original musical that's opening up post-pandemic. A lot of the things that we're seeing open have been open pre-pandemic. And we are like a brand spanking new original musical. And it is the best feeling to offer up something that no one's ever seen before. It's not based on anything. It's like our creative brainchild, and we hope it gives people the chance to come in and laugh and experience some joy and experience some music they've never heard before. And all those things that we go to the theater for, we go to see musicals for, you know, it just feels a little bit sparklier and more special, I guess I would say. And, you know, it's just kind of like we're hoping for the best, and we're hoping everyone gets vaccinated and, you know, continues to wear their masks so that we can get through this. And I feel so grateful that in spite of the pandemic, in spite of the various variants, we are like pushing forward, and we are, you know, it's important for us to make this show and to give this show to people and to give people a place to just like hang up their worries for a second and come enjoy something, you know, really fun and also heartwarming. So it's kind of the best feeling in the world. And, you know, it's one of those moments where you're like, I was born to do this. I like, this just feels like with every fiber of my being, this is exactly what I want to be doing right now.
Do you specifically have a plan for yourself to make sure that you stay healthy and that you're not exposed to COVID at all again? So, I mean, as the producer, as writer, as actor in it, you have threefold in the, you know, the stake to be well and be healthy. Like, do you have anything planned that you're like, I don't know, I'm staying home, I'm just traveling to and from the theater? Like, what's sort of on your mind?
Yes,
for that?
100%. I'm like, I don't go anywhere. I don't see anyone, because, you know, first of all, like in a small off-Broadway show where there are three cast members and there are no understudies, like that's one thing where you're like, don't screw around with that. And then also like putting on my writer's hat, I mean, these days have been crazy where it's like I'm in rehearsal for 8 hours and then I like come home and like have an hour to myself before I get back on Zoom with Alex to do rewrites. And you need to be present in all aspects of that game. Like, you, your mind needs to be right. And you can't be like going out to like dinner and parties and stuff like that, because there's work that needs to be done. Not only that, like you won't see me without my mask. And, you know, like, I don't know, things like our opening night party, like I'm planning on not mingling during the opening night party just right. Because it's just one of those things, like you don't want to be taking that risk. And I try not to take the subway. I try to like ride the city bike, or I try to walk when I can. And then, you know, the normal things, like when you're in a show, just like being hydrated and like making sure you're getting your vegetables and getting your sleep. And like, oh my gosh, this process in terms of my sleep, it feels like I am a robot. It's like, okay, it is 11 o'clock. Now I do the sleep. I put on my sleep meditation app and I lay like a coffin, like a vampire in a coffin, and I do the sleep, and then I wake up and I do it again. Like it feels very regimented, just like when you're doing any other show. And, you know, steaming the cords and taking care, you know, all those things still feel in place. And then there's, of course, the heightened COVID protocols that, you know, like we're wearing our masks in new spaces or on breaks, or if there's a new guest in the room, we're all in our masks. And our creative team, our stage management team, our producing team are always masked. So we're just trying to mitigate the risk as best we can. And we've been doing a pretty good job. And I will say, this past year with the pandemic, like wearing masks, I knock on wood, I'm like knocking on all the wood around, like I have not gotten my standard like twice a year sinus infection.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like I haven't gotten colds. And I think with the excessive hand washing and the sanitizing and all of it, like I'm like, this can stay. We will keep this habit.
We love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, like I was on the train the other day and I was just looking around and everyone was wearing their masks. And I was like, I wouldn't be upset if this was the new normal.
Love to see it. Absolutely love to see it.
I don't want to get my yearly, you know, flu thing that I get, you know, every March. I don't want to do it. It's awful. It sets me back days, you know? So
absolutely.
Just wear a mask. So we talked about, you know, how to get tickets, which is on reginacomet.com. And the show is playing at the DR2 Theater at Union Square East, which is on 103 East 15th Street. So you know how to get tickets. Now let's talk about the show itself. when writing a show, how did you and Alex come up with the, because I'm obsessed with the story. I think it's I think it's amazing. For those of you that don't know what Regina Comet is about, two nobodies dream of writing one hit song for everybody, but their day job composing jingles for commercials isn't the big break they hoped. That is until they're plucked from obscurity by a world famous pop star named Regina Comet. If destiny had a child, it would be her. And she wants them to create an anthem for her supernova pipes and her new perfume. They're so close to the big time, they could smell it, but following your passion doesn't always lead where you expect. Making a hit song can be a shit show. Sure, making anything can be a shit show. So how did this concept come about? What made you say yes? Like, what, lead us through it.
So Alex and I grew up together in Cleveland, Ohio, and we did, I know, twist.
I didn't know that.
Isn't that wild? Like, we've known each other for many years. Many, many, many years.
We're jingle bells.
And we did, yeah, we did youth theater together. And Alex is 2 years older than me. And I always looked up to him when I was a kid because he was like this young equity actor. He'll tell you he did not.
He still is.
I know, he sure is. Oh my God. He'll tell you he did not have his equity card when he was a child, but to me he did. And he was like working regionally and like, you know, I was like, I want to do it. And we did a few shows together and we've kept in touch all these years, of course. And we were cast as best friends in The Flamingo Kid, like I said, in I think 2018.
Which I saw you do.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Great. I loved it.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Super, super fun show. I mean, like for the summer, yes, please.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we were cast as best friends. They housed us like in our company housing. We were neighbors and we just got so close and had a ball. And like I said, that fall, Alex called me one day and was like, in a moment of frustration, I think with the industry of like waiting for permission, he's like, do you want to make something? And I was like, yes. Yes, I do. And we got together over lunch and talked about ideas. And I think our original idea was like, let's do a show. Let's do a 54 Below show. And we'll do duets and we'll do solos and we'll do the whole thing where you do a 54 Below show. And that lasted like a day. And then we were like, let's come up with a story. Maybe this thing will be different by us weaving in a story. And then that lasted about a day until we had this like obscure, weird, bizarre story about a pop star who is trying to regain her relevance. And she is launching a campaign to sell a perfume to do it. And maybe we're these songwriters and maybe we are tasked with writing this jingle for her to regain her relevance, you know? And I think some of that concept obviously was born out of us feeling like, okay, we're in our 30s now in this industry that just keeps skewing younger and younger. And are we relevant and where do we fit in? You know, things that I think we all experienced. And that kind of became our place to channel a lot of that. And we also wanted to write a show about friendship. And we also wanted to write a show about collaboration and creativity. And this story started forming in front of our eyes and it went through, you know, many stages of development. And once we had our concept and I think we had a pretty decent rough draft, we approached our director, our brilliant director, Marshall Paylet, who directed Triassic Park and Who's Your Bag Daddy. And he's a brilliant writer as well. And Alex had worked with him years ago and we met over Thai food one night and we kind of pitched him the concept and sent him some demos and some writing samples, I think. And he was like, oh, I love it. I love it. It's great. And we always knew it wanted to be, once we decided this was a musical that we wanted to do, it was a three-hander, you know, it's one of those things, like you have to use your imagination, you know, when there's like barely any set and there are barely any ensemble members to paint the world, like that's a really fun challenge as a playwright, you know, like how do you make this world come alive with so few resources? And Marshall was on board and we got to work and we spent the last few years developing it. And especially during the pandemic, like doing Zoom readings, which was a pain, and like making demos over Zoom and writing music over Zoom and editing scenes over Zoom. So we went through a number of drafts, and then we got our lead producer, Cody Lassen, on board. We sent him the script. He loved it. And he's been helping us since then take it to the big leagues, to the off-Broadway big leagues. And, you know, we spent some time gathering investors and sending the script out. And now we're in production. It's kind of hard to believe. You know, we were supposed to open during the pandemic, and obviously everything got pushed, but luckily here we are. And like I mentioned before, you know, we've been in rehearsal these past 2 weeks, and it's been fun sort of wearing my actor hat again, but also for the first time, really officially wearing my writer's hat. And it's been challenging and really fun to, you know, look at a show from an outside perspective and say, like, okay, like, what is this scene doing? And, you know, and here's where like the multi-hyphenate comes into play. Like, I think my training as an actor helped me so much with the writing in terms of, you know, I know as an actor, I need to figure out what my character wants and what they're doing to get what they want and what's in their way. And, you know, where they're at in their life and who they are. Mm-hmm. And all those questions that I always ask myself as an actor looking at someone else's work really help me, you know, bring some ideas to the blank page of like, okay, so I need to make sure that in the writing is their want and their need and their, you know, obstacle and objective and their tactics and all that stuff. So, you know, it's been really fun rewriting and refining. And our leading lady, Brianna Marie Parham, who's just brilliant. Like, oh my gosh, she's so good. The voice like will bowl you over. She's so funny. She's so sweet. And we've gotten to really tailor this part to her. And that's been a great joy of this process, is just getting to know her and getting to know her strengths and writing toward those things, because obviously Alex and I were writing toward our strengths this whole time. And the satisfaction of like creating a role for yourself. Ooh, I can't even tell you, like, you know what I mean? Like, any line that feels funny, cut. You know what I mean? Any line that like I wish my character would say, there it is. You know, so that has been so joyous. And then to be able to share that with Brianna and to get her input and to like find out who she is and how she speaks and her cadence, and then transforming the role and putting it on her, has just been so wonderful. And here we are at the beginning of tech, and we have all the elements coming together now. Our amazing scenic designer Wilson Chin and all our amazing designers, and everything is just coming together, and it's so exciting. And it's, we have this real show and an audience in 5 days, and it's almost hard to believe after what we've been through the past few years, but we're making a show, baby.
You're making a show, baby. There's a few things I want to unpack there. And that's, one is the creative process. So, because I feel like so many people that are writing their own material, they have their own process. Do you, like, what is the space like? Is it like, do you, when you're rehearsing and running, it's like, do you just sort of like try out a new line that you were thinking of like while you were in the elevator, or you're like, all right, in this moment, I'm actually going to try this new line first, just letting you know, or it's just pretty, you just follow those impulses.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. And like, also there are no rules, you know, especially in this process where we're the actors and the writers, we're not going to pretend like we're the actors in one moment and then only the writers in the other moment. Like, we're all things at all times. So yeah, it'll be exactly like you said, like we'll be running a scene and then we'll stop and be like, okay, how did that go? And it's like, I felt okay as an actor, but like, are we accomplishing the thing that the scene needs to accomplish in this moment? And if not, or like, you know, this joke didn't work, let's think of another joke. And then we kind of all pitch ideas and we kind of like spitball off each other. Or it's something like, okay, we know this scene isn't working. Alex and I need to kind of go home with this and spend some time outside of the room to come up with a new idea or to figure out the game here, figure out how to make this work. So we're kind of finding our process as we go, but it's super collaborative. And Alex and I are really not precious about our work. It's like, every so often you have to, as we say in the biz, like kill a baby, you know, like something you worked really hard on sometimes just like is not working and you have to just throw it away and start over.
Kill your babies. Now, okay. I'm obsessed with you. I'm obsessed with this conversation. So now there's a few. Yes. Okay. So I don't know if you've seen, but I have a book coming out about multi-hyphenating, and
congratulations.
Thank you. One of my chapters is about multitasking and multi-hyphenating, how multitasking is not multi-hyphenating. There's quite a difference, but our shared professor, Norm Johnson, Dr. Norm Johnson, who I interviewed for the book, because I remember him saying in one movement class, he went, "It is impossible for human beings to multitask." And I was always like, why? And he explained that it has to do with active switching, that we don't, that we just get quicker and quicker and quicker with our switching. But I'm sort of obsessed with the idea of like what you're bringing into Regina Comet is like that you're sort of figuring out almost the objective and tactics of the actor through the writing. It's, and you're figuring out this way to actually combine those efforts as opposed to being like, all right, actor hat, let's go. And then reconvening afterwards and being like, all right, writer hat, let's go. What worked? It's,
that's such a good point. I feel like I remember him saying that to our class as well. That's so insane. Yeah. And maybe he's right. Like maybe it is just that we're really, you know, it's quick switching. And I'm not going to say like, yes, I said that we're all doing all the things at all the all times, like, but there are moments where I'm like, I don't know what this looks like. I don't know how this is playing. Right. I feel like I'm stuck inside the world and I can't really see the perspective. And there are other times when it is a little bit more clear and I'm like, okay, this, I can see that this isn't working on a character level. And so yeah, that's a really interesting thing. And honestly, I'm still learning and I'm still like figuring it out for myself.
Yeah, but we're all human too. It's like what works for us one day is not going to work for us the next day. Like sometimes we switch. Sometimes it's like this weird cosmic energy that is just like it all blended together. Like there's
absolutely there are no rules. And that's why collaboration is such a beautiful thing, because you can, when you have great collaborators, you can trust them to see things that you can't see and to throw out ideas that you would have never thought of and then build off those. And that's been the beautiful thing about working with Marshall, working with Bree, working with Alex, is like, we're all, it's kind of like not only best idea wins, but like everyone's free to throw an idea and then someone builds on that idea who then builds on that idea. And before we know it, we have this amazing idea that took all four of us to kind of build.
It's really cool hearing you talk about how you've sort of vetted your collaboration process, because I think what can happen with some people is that you can jump into collaboration processes and they can end really poorly because someone didn't do their research or someone didn't like pay attention to the red flags. But like you and Alex have a very long relationship and like, you know, each other's the things that, you know, trigger certain personalities and stresses and joys, you know, things like that. So you went into this knowing about this human being, even though this is your first collaboration on this level.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, collaboration, it's a lot about the art of like knowing how to deal with people, like you're saying. And I think that really helped our collaboration, but it's just like having that rapport, like knowing when you need to step up a little bit, knowing when you need to back off a little bit. And, you know, collaboration can be tricky because it requires you to say yes. And sometimes you're saying yes and to an idea that you don't quite understand yet, but it's important that you give space and time for that idea to percolate. And it can be really easy to be like, I don't get it. No. So I can see how sometimes that, collaboration in general can be frustrating in that way, because you're like, I have this really specific idea. And now you're building off of it in a way that just is a different direction. And I don't know how to like see it, but it sometimes that kind of unknown is the money, you know, and the unknown is scary. So it's kind of ironic that the money lies in a scary place, but that's, you know, I think that's part of like growing as an artist, is like realizing that that unknown is the place where you actually want to be. And sometimes that place of comfortability, when you feel polished and like you're muscling it and you've got control of it, is actually not the place you want to be, even though that feels more safe and comfortable.
Right. Yeah, that's perfect. I mean, I think that's why theater is still an art form, even when it is commercial. I think the blood, sweat, and tears that we really do pour into our creations and what we do is what makes us take a step back and go, okay, like we did everything we could. We engaged in our art, but we also put on this commercial brain and thought like business people.
Right.
And, you know, I think commercial theaters, producing any sort of theater, is a really interesting thing because it really does teach a lot of lessons in that way.
Yeah. Something I'm learning about it is like, you kind of dream up the idea, and in your dream, it can be anything. I mean, you can have your characters levitate above the skyscrapers and like bust into a million pieces and like, you know, fan themselves through the streets all to just come back together again. You can write that on paper.
I love Les Mis.
Okay. Oh my God. And then when you're putting on your business brain, you're like, okay, let's take that idea and let's make it work with this budget. And now all of a sudden you're putting some parameters around your idea. And like oftentimes those kind of parameters can set us free, you know, like sometimes when there are no rules and no budget, it's a little bit like, oh, okay, this could be literally anything. Mm-hmm. But when you put those barriers around it, you're like, okay, I got to figure out how to make this work with $100. Fine. And that opens up other ideas, you know? So that's what I'm learning is like, sort of like, don't be afraid to dream up the idea and then put on your business hat and say, okay, how do I make this idea work under the circumstances? You know, rather than approaching it the other way, going, okay, I have to make a good idea with $100. Okay, what's a good idea with $100? You know?
Right, yeah. I love that you said that because it's like, and I always quote her, my high school teacher, like my biggest inspiration for multi-hyphenating, but Elena Garcia always says can and stick theater. It's like you can make magic out of a can and a stick. And it's the same thing with $100, right? Like,
absolutely.
You know, and it's interesting because it's like, when does an artist continue to sell their show with a specific point of view? Like, how long does it take until it becomes like a self-focused thing, or it's like, okay, there's no place for this. Like, how long do we try to sell something until maybe that magical person comes by and is like, I actually see your vision and I will give you that $9 million to bring you to a show? Or when do we start to change our expectations and go, all right, well, maybe if this one scene where he's flying above the skyline and bursts into a million pieces, maybe that's not attractive to some people and I'm going to change this. When do you think as writers, it's appropriate to start to sort of change and listen to those clues?
That's a great question. You know, I think, again, there are no rules, and I think there's great value in seeking out people's opinions. Something we did with Regina Kama is we consulted, I mean, our producer Cody was really brilliant, even just in the title, a commercial jingle for Regina Kama. We were like, are people going to like this title? Are people going to like, is this going to make people buy tickets? And we did, you know, market research. We polled random people and said, like, what do you think the show is about? Would you buy a ticket to the show? And we like gathered research. And to that point, we were ready to change it. Actually, I think maybe it did go through a change, but like, I think we need to be, as artists, like flexible and ready to change, like always, and not be so precious about our ideas. Because that's the thing, is like, you can be so precious about an idea and hang on to it for so long, and just be in denial about the fact that like this isn't selling because of X, Y, and Z. But you know, if the goal is to really like make something that people can see and that people will buy tickets to and that can be producible, you have to have your eye on that goal and not the goal of like, this one moment is so special to me, that because now your goal is a little bit out of whack. So I think it's about being flexible always, and it's about finding people you trust to give you their feedback. And yeah, if something's not selling, I think it's worthy to try and figure out, and valuable to figure out, like, okay, what is the reason here? And ask people, like, what is the thing that's holding you back? And reframe it in your mind and readdress it and give it another pass. And like, that's the thing about being a creative. You know, I think Jen Waldman always says, like, creativity is taking two things that wouldn't necessarily go together and figure out how they can go together. And it's, you know, there's problem solving. There's, like, puzzle pieces that need to be rearranged, and it's hard and scary and frustrating sometimes. It's not, you know, creating isn't always all just like imagining and like theorizing, and you know, sometimes it's about taking an idea that you can't shake and redoing the puzzle pieces until it becomes something more palatable for others. And you know, and it's a fine line, because you're creating art for yourself, but you're also, you know, I think mostly creating it for the world and for people, you know, like that's another reason to not be too precious about your art, because it's not really for you. You have to figure out who it's for, you know?
Well, I can't wait for the world to see Regina Comet. Please go to reginacomet.com for tickets, and where you're going to see Ben Fankhauser nail this brand new musical off Broadway at the DR2 Theater at Union Square East. That's 103 East 15th Street. So get tickets now. Ben, I'll let you go to tech. You're the best for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Have a great day. You know, use your throat coat and your whatever. What did you used to do? I feel like you did like Entertainer's Secret or something like that.
Oh my God, all of it. Throat coat, Entertainer's Secret, Flonase,
yes,
just drugged up. Oh my God,
drugged up and ready to go.
Claritin, all of it.
We
anyway,
love it.
Thank you for having me. What a wonderful conversation. I hope to see you all at the show. And this is a beautiful conversation.
You're the best, Ben. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. Please follow me on Instagram at Dear Multi-Hyphenate or at The Michael Kushner. And if you would like to be on an episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate and share your multi-hyphenate story, please visit DearMultiHyphenate.com and submit a form through that website. And that website was beautifully designed by JS Productions. If you're looking for a new website, please check them out. They are incredible. And as always, thank you to the Broadway Podcast Network. Thank you to Dory, Alan, Katie, Yo, everyone. You're all incredible. And please subscribe, download, like, comment, all of that good stuff. And keep in touch, please. I love hearing from you. I hope everyone has a great day. And I hope that you're feeling inspired and supported and seen and heard and all of that beautiful stuff. You can always rely on me to hear and see you. So keep creating, keep doing, keep working, keep making magic. Have a good day, everyone.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.